it's got electrolytes.
So protein combined with synthetic aminos, vitamins, and minerals. Everything the body needs.
I'm only eating foods with less than 30% calories from fat. It's 40%.
He read the squirrels were high in cholesterol.
Views and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of WMFO, Tufts University, or the Friedman School of Nutrition.
Yes. Who's hungry?
And the people did feast upon the lambs and sloths and calf and anchovies and orangutans and breakfast cereals and fruit bats.
Wake up!
Hey, good morning, and welcome back to an Unbalanced Breakfast here on WMFO Medford 91.5 FM, streaming live on WMFO.org. And we are back after about a three-week vacation, but we are back on the airways, back at our original time slot here, Saturday mornings, 8 o'clock for the summer. Probably going to be doing every other week, but we'll see how it goes and keep you posted. So if you want to weigh in here, number is, there's two numbers, 855-915-WMFO, also 855-915-9636. You can also dial in at 781-350-3264. You can also reach me on Twitter, Boxman37. And you may want to call in today because we have a guest live in studio. And I'm going to turn it over now to Kathleen, who's also back, to introduce him.
Hey, yeah. So our guest today is Eli Feldman. He is the co-founder of Clothbound. It's a platform that combines the combines hospitality and technology to support the growth and development of restaurant industry professionals. So welcome, Eli.
Hello.
I took a quick peek at your LinkedIn profile before you got here, and I saw that your career path has taken you from service management and operations to consulting. Now you're the founder of, or co-founder of Clothbound. Something that I was struck by on your profile that you wrote, you wrote that each step along this path has confirmed for me that restaurants are changing our bodies we live in and the fabric of our society. That's a big statement.
Yes, it's been a while since I revisited my LinkedIn profile, so thanks for bringing that back out. But I believe that even more fully now than I did when I typed it. Yeah.
Excellent. So tell us about Clothbound.
So Clothbound is a belittling a two-sided market with restaurants and restaurant jobs on one side and then a candidate pool on the other. So, and we work to connect the two of them.
Great. So why is something like this important to have?
Well, I think, you know, it kind of goes back to the LinkedIn profile. Restaurants are having a much greater impact on the economy and the city, and you know, restaurants depend on great people in order to be successful, and the ways that we've typically found great people are pretty antiquated and they need to be modernized.
Sure. So can we talk a little bit about the labor shortage that exists in the restaurant industry? I think like when I met you, you threw out some pretty fascinating statistics about the impact on our economy as a whole, and I just had no idea, like it wasn't something that I'd ever thought about before.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people often aren't aware of sort of the size and scale of the restaurant industry. So I'll just kind of reset some of those statistics. So the restaurant industry is over $750 billion in the U.S. One thing to note about that is that does not mean that restaurateurs are making a ton of money. They average about a nickel on the dollar in terms of profit. So that also gives you a little bit of insight into the size of the overall economy, because of that $750 billion, 95% of it is going back out. So the restaurant economy overall in this country is over $1.5 trillion. And, you know, just to set that one, like, that's bigger than the economy of Australia or Spain. So we're talking about a behemoth, but it's a very fractured one. There's around a million, depending on how you define restaurants in the U.S., and 70 to 75% of those are independent. So it's just a very fractured industry, so it's hard to see it as a large whole.
Definitely, that's huge. That's a lot of money, and that's a lot of potential employment or people who work in the food service industry.
I mean, there's, you know, 1 in 10 employable people in this country is working in food service or restaurants in some capacity. So there are very few industries that capture 10%. And I'm a little, you know, we'll end with the statistics in a second, but it's also true that 1 in 2 people in America have worked in restaurants at some point in their lives. So not a lot. I think there's almost no other industry where you can have that level of connection with people and impact.
Definitely. So tell us a little bit more about how Clothbound came about and what it actually is and what it does.
Yeah. So I think it would be easier to start with what it is and what it does.
Okay.
So we work with around 100 restaurants in the greater Boston, Cape, and Islands right now. We, you know, because the restaurant industry is so large, we have to focus on sort of a specific segment. So we often work with more chef-driven, independent, and locally sourced focused restaurants, both high-end and fast casual. So they give us jobs, and they post jobs on Clothbound, and we present, market, sell those jobs to candidates. So we do kind of think of it a little bit as Clothbound is a store where we put good restaurant jobs on the shelves, and then we try to attract an audience into the store to buy those jobs.
Sure. So I'm aware that there's a lot of turnover in the restaurant industry. Do you have an idea of why that happens?
Well, I mean, I think that there's, you know, there is something inherently transient in the job itself. You know, in order for an industry to accommodate one in two people at some point in their lives, it has to be fairly flexible. Mm-hmm. So yes, restaurant turnover, you know, nationwide is up around 70% annually. And a good portion of that is just the inherent transiency. A lot of it, though, does have to do with selection on both sides. So restaurants making good decisions about who to hire and individuals making good decisions about where to work. So some of the things we've tried to do with Clothbound is actually help each side make better decisions by elevating what's important to the employee and elevating what's compelling about the employer.
Interesting. Okay. So I've actually never worked in the food service industry, but
yeah, neither have I. So
I know a lot.
Great. So my stats screwed right there. Thanks, guys.
No, I know a lot of people.
So now one in three Americans.
I know a lot of people who have, and I often feel like I'm the odd one out among lots of my friends who do hold
sure
food service industry jobs. Where was I going with this? Oh, I was thinking about how expensive it is to live in the city, and knowing what I know about it can be difficult. It can be difficult. It can also be lucrative to make money in food service.
How do you reconcile the cost of living in a city with what you make as a restaurant employee?
Well, just when there are so many people who do work in the restaurant industry.
Yeah, I mean, so and this is a major point of discussion in the Boston area and in cities around the country, is around restaurant wages. You know, in the back of the house, it's primarily hourly workforce. In the front of the house, tip subsidized hourly, but primarily just tips.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it can be very difficult with the rising cost of living in major cities. It is very, very difficult. And one of the things that we're starting to see as food culture and great restaurant culture makes its way into more and more parts of the country is that now you have more options as an aspiring cook or an aspiring restaurateur. You know, you can go find great restaurants in Asheville, North Carolina, and have a more viable cost of living.
Mm-hmm.
So that presents more challenges for the Bostons, the New Yorks, the Chicagos of the world.
Do you foresee more restaurants turning away from the tip system and more towards compensating servers from the house with an hourly wage? Because I know that one or two restaurants, at least around here, have started to do that on their own. Is that going to be a trend, do you think? Or
I think that, you know, that the elimination of the tip system is something that, while I do support it, I'm a little bit of a wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Meyer, who's the country's foremost restaurateur, decided to eliminate tips at his restaurants. And I think that brought that conversation to the table very, very quickly. The wait and see on my end only has to do with the fact that it is, you need a lot of data and you need a lot of time and resources to analyze what's actually happening
sure
and predict what's going to happen. And because we are talking about people's livelihoods, mm-hmm. I think if you're a smaller restaurant that doesn't have those resources, it could be negatively impactful. But ultimately, we need to increase what restaurant employees make and improve parity between the front and the back of the house. Looking at the tip system is a great way to start doing that, but it can't be the only way.
Sure. And then just to jump back to the app real quick, in terms of, so basically from either perspective, if I'm a restaurant or if I'm a restaurant owner or if I'm an employee, aspiring employee, what does it look like? How does it work? So I download the app, and then if I'm an employee, it's sort of like a...
If you download the app as an employee, you have a couple options. You can create a profile, which is sort of an inverted resume, where we focus a little more on kind of what type of person you are and what you're looking for, and then tell us where you worked and tell us where you went to school. Mm-hmm. Or you can just window shop and look at the jobs that are currently available. And oftentimes, a lot of our users will do that. And then when they start to see, when we put a new product in the store, i.e. a new job or at a new restaurant, they might create a profile and then apply. So you can message right through the app directly to the restaurant. I think, you know, if you live in a world where LinkedIn is more relevant than it is in the restaurant industry, this may not seem that new or interesting, right. But the reality is that over 80% of restaurant hiring is actually done through things like Craigslist,
okay.
or just personal networks. So the idea of having visibility on both sides is actually a fairly novel concept for restaurant employment.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's good. So if I apply to a job through the app, does the restaurant typically have its own process beyond that in terms of getting a resume or a profile?
We view ourselves as a more efficient means of connecting one-to-one.
Okay.
We fully understand and hope that no one is hiring someone just based on what they read
right.
on an app. But we hope we make it easier and faster to connect with one another. On the restaurant side, they also have the ability to look at a pool of, I think at this point, there's 1,600 active profiles and about 4,500 users on Clothbound. So if they see a profile of someone they're interested in, they can reach out to that person. So what we've tried to do is create a little more of a two-way street than has previously existed.
Okay.
So one of the things that you mentioned the other day when we talked was that restaurants that tend to be thoughtful about their hiring practices and the way they treat their employees also tend to be those restaurants who are buying local and sustainable food and really care about where things are sourced from.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that that's true. I stand by that comment. I also think that if you really look at something, if you look at that en masse, if a restaurant has any sense of continuity and they're going to apply some of the same principles across everything they do. And, I think you could say that about a great restaurant, that if they're thoughtful about, where their ingredients are coming from, they're more likely to be thoughtful about their people. I think you could say the same thing about a law office, if they're
sure.
thoughtful about
mm-hmm.
recycling and about, how they take care of their clients and they don't view them as just a commodity, then they're probably more likely to take care of their lawyers too. So it's I think that's a generally true statement.
That's true. I feel like a lot of us who do care about food justice also care about things like the environment and clean and good food that isn't laden with pesticides or
sure.
does harm to animals always. Maybe that's a point of disagreement in some circles, but yeah, I think that's really interesting that, my understanding is that those are the kinds of restaurants that you aim to partner with.
Yeah, so, we do try to be, we have a couple different tiers that we have to think about bringing restaurants on board. One being geography, because we have to bring on restaurants where we can invest resources in creating a candidate pool for them. Two, though, we do try to make sure that we're bringing on restaurants that fit into the community of restaurants we've created. My background is in chef-driven restaurants that are very sort of conscious about their sourcing. And, you know, we started on that segment of the restaurant industry primarily because it was what we knew and it's what we really care about. That being said, you know, I think that the only way the needle moves over time for overall improvement of the industry is to actually expose best practices from a human standpoint and a people standpoint across a wider swath of the industry. And so I'm not going to say that, you know, if we're, knock on wood, hopefully successful, we won't eventually work with different types of restaurants. We definitely will. And we think that that will actually be positive for the overall labor culture and employment culture.
Sure.
And so I'm always curious about this just in general. Actually, I have kind of two questions about the app itself again. So first is kind of technically, how did it come about? Is this something that you've done before that you put together? How did you get it done?
So, you know, we didn't set out to, honestly, at the beginning, we didn't set out to build a piece of technology at all. About 3.5 years ago, we went out and did a lot of research and exploration about, you know, what are the top 5 or 10 problems that restaurants are facing? And the labor issue actually wasn't number one or number two. It was number three. And when we actually started to talk to people about, tried to get access to the restaurateurs to talk to them about problems one and two.
Can you say what those are?
They had to do with the restaurant economics and like the 5 to 6 cents profitability.
Okay.
You know, the reason that no one could actually come to the table and really discuss it was I'm down a line cook, I'm down a manager, I'm down a sous chef. And so then we kind of realized that the number three problem was actually the number one problem. And then you can start to address the others a little further down the road. You realize you kind of have to address the economics in order to address the people side. But how it came about was we brought together a group of 30 or 40 restaurateurs around labor issues in restaurants, or restaurateurs, everything from chefs and line cooks to design thinkers and city officials, to talk about this problem. And one of the things that became readily apparent was that while there may be a shortage of restaurant employees, there's not a shortage of people who could benefit from a good restaurant job. And so then we realized that one of the core issues to solve for were access and awareness of jobs in the communities where they're most needed, and then closing the gap between where those people might be from a hard skill and where they need to be in order to work in a good restaurant job. Okay. So we realized we can't address the education and training part if we don't have access to the people, and the way you reach larger communities of people efficiently these days is technology. Mm-hmm. A plus B equaled C. We worked with a local team called Cantina out of Fort Point to help us design and build the first app, and are now looking to bring the engineering team in-house and continue to improve the product.
Awesome. And so it launched just over a year ago now, right?
Is that? Yeah.
Okay. And so you were, what can you talk about what the 2015, the Mass Challenge Accelerator class was, and how you're able to raise money for getting off the ground and then continue to do so?
Yeah, I mean, we raised a little bit of money out of the gate from some successful restaurateurs in the city who recognized that this was a really important problem to solve, and thankfully had a crazy belief that we might be people who could help solve it. And then also people from the technology angel community. Mass Challenge was something we applied to. It's an accelerator program, a great accelerator program here in Boston that provides resources and potentially funding for startups. We didn't win that side of things, but we were able to meet some really great mentors who have been really helpful ever since we left the program.
Great. And then just one more question before we take a break. So obviously, like you just said, the easiest way to reach a lot of people is through technology, mobile apps like this. Is there any concern that there could be, but you're in a unique area right now, but is there any concern about the future where potential, I don't know, overlap or saturation? I know just at least there's websites like Good Food Jobs, Branch Food, which is local here as well, and then your app. Do you think that more people are going to get into this, that it'll be a field of growth for you, or do you think that there's a potential of too many apps and people not knowing which to use, or is that a good thing because then they have different avenues?
Well, I think in general, competition tends to be a good thing. Also, we are talking, kind of going back, we're talking about a massive industry that was really technologically very underserved for a very long time. There's a lot of room for growth, even amongst the three companies you mentioned. We don't even view either of them as our quote unquote competitors. Sure. The work that, Lauren's doing at Branch Food is complementary and amazing work that helps us, doesn't hurt us, and we hope that what we're doing helps her.
Great. All right. And so how can people get the app?
So right now we're just, you can get the app through the Apple App Store. We hope to be on Android in the relatively near future. But right now just on the App Store. The only other way to, I do also want to mention that we are opening a pop-up and recruiting center in downtown Boston. So even if you are on Apple, but if you're on Android and interested in learning more about the restaurant industry, you can stop by and see us. We'll be opening late next week.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, thank you very much. And so, Eli, you're planning to stick around, right, for a little bit longer on
the
show here?
Yeah, definitely.
So we will be back with more. I'm going to take a song break here. So we're going to play Kathleen's Choice. Do you want to introduce it?
Fantastic Negrito. I actually was just introduced to this artist within the last couple weeks, and he sounded really cool. I was feeling a little bit bluesy, so... This is called
Lost in a Crowd.
Lost in a Crowd, thank you.
So, you are hearing it on an Unbalanced Breakfast, WMFO in Medford, 91.5 FM, streaming live on WMFO.org.
Get yourself together. It's here, it's on.
And all the good-hearted people say.
And welcome back to an Unbalanced Breakfast here on WMFO Medford 91.5 FM, streaming live on WMFO.org. You just heard Lost in a Crowd from Fantastic Negrito, which was Kathleen's song of the week. Thank you for, not entirely my genre, but good song, good choice.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, so again, we are here with Eli from Clothbound, an application or an app that helps connect restaurants to potential employees in the food service industry. If you want to give us a call here, two different numbers, 781-350-3264 or 855-915-WMFO. That's 855-915-9636. And we are going to stick on the topic of the restaurant industry a little bit more generally here, because just the fact that we had Eli in kind of recalled some other articles that have been published in the Boston Globe this year, just about the industry, both locally and more nationally. So one was actually an app that, and I guess this is kind of interesting to, and maybe Eli, you can weigh in on this, but just how different factors affect the restaurant industry. One thing with wages and employment, obviously the recession had a huge impact. But then there's this new app called Go Papaya, which Kathleen mentioned, that helps connect restaurants to customers. And one of the reasons was just the obviously we lucked out this past winter, but the winter before that had a huge impact on both farms and restaurants. And so, like, sure. I just think that that's kind of, I don't know if you can talk a little bit about that, just how external factors like that people may not think about, like it may like make you late on the T to your 9-to-5 job, but you don't know what the impact it is having on farms and restaurants and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, something like the winter of 2015 certainly had a massive impact on the restaurant industry. You know, restaurants were down, some restaurants were down 70-80% during that snowstorm. And it is, you know, restaurants feel everything intensely and in real time, as do farms. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're so intrinsically linked to a base biological need, i.e. eating and drinking, you feel everything very, very quickly. And restaurants in particular tend to feel things very quickly because they're also, not only are they linked to a biological human need, they're also linked to the disposable dollar. So things, fluctuations in the economy and in sort of entertainment trends impact the restaurant industry really quickly as well.
Sure. And so one thing, that this new app or newish app, Go Papaya, includes is the restaurants can establish different discounts or specials for people that are using that. And this is a question I feel like that always came up. Again, Kathy and I have not been in the food industry, but something like that, you know, deal specific to an app or back in the day when Groupon was a huge deal. Like, people obviously flocked to Groupon, but then there was a concern on the other side that this was actually harmful to restaurants, that they got this one-time discount. People would go, but then never go back, and then in the long run, it may have been hurting restaurants. Do you find that to be the truth, or do you
I'm careful to speak in absolutes about any of those things, because you really do have to get into sort of like the nuts and bolts of
Thing with nutrition.
The nuts and bolts of contribution margins versus profit margins, and it is complicated. Suffice it to say that, like, you know, you can think of a restaurant. Some restaurants are sort of like airplanes, where once they take off, it's really hard to get anyone on them. So anything that's being done to kind of, what I always think of is sort of activate dormant seat inventory, I think it has the potential to have positive impact.
Right.
But it's tricky. Like, again, back to biology and other things in our lives, like, we're not programmed to eat dinner at 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Our lives don't program us that way. And so tables are empty at 5 o'clock because most people don't eat at 5 o'clock. And so that's I always think the labor problem's a really tough one to crack. The getting people to eat at 4:45 to 6 o'clock at night. God love the people who are trying to make that happen.
So one thing about this app, it's not meant for making a specific reservation at a restaurant for Tuesday if today is Monday. Like, Go Papaya is meant to be kind of a real-time draw for customers. So like you were saying, that kind of fits in with the fact that the restaurant industry is responding to real-time needs, and that that might depend on the day of the week, or it might depend on the weather.
Yeah, no, and I have a very, very light familiarity with that app and others that are, you know, there are a couple people who are really trying to solve what is a major problem in the industry, which is, you know, I've got sunk cost in real estate and in seats and in tables, and I have to maximize what I do with that. You know, so I think whether it's real time or with a little bit more lead time, whatever is being done to do that is probably, at the end of the day, going to be very, very helpful. I think what it does for restaurants is, though, you have to, you know, in all the noise that technology is creating for a consumer at 6 o'clock on things that someone wants you to do right there in that moment, how do you create something compelling and resonant for them? Is, I think, where ultimately what it boils down to.
I wonder also about the challenge of, like, getting people to find these apps. I am not that familiar with Go Papaya. It might be something that I would use if I knew about it, but the problem is that you have to, like, have that audience before it becomes something that's useful. Is that something that you've encountered with Clothbound? Have you...
Yeah, I mean, to a degree, like, people can't quote unquote buy a product that they're not aware of. At the same time, there's a fundamental difference between being, you know, a consumer product where, like, you're basically going at everyone who might ever have an interest in going out to eat. That's has the potential to be a massive number of people, but it's also really hard to target specifically who you're most likely to get.
Definitely.
Whereas we are kind of saying we exist for restaurants and restaurant employees, and so you know, if you're an orthodontist who wants to go out to eat, we would love for you to go out to eat, and we hope you have a great time, but you're definitely not our customer, so it kind of narrows the field a little more for us.
And so, kind of switching gears now a little bit, again, sticking with the food service industry, but from a different perspective, I mean, like you mentioned, just kind of generally people are less aware of sometimes the impact things are having on employees in the industry. There was an article a few months ago in the Globe about how the industry itself can be hard on employees' mental health. And so I guess one question from more of a practical standpoint is, do you see that the labor shortage... Would you say it's more of people having to work 80-hour weeks? Is that just the nature of the beast? Is it because there's a labor shortage, so there's not enough distribution of the labor? How would that? Because that's one of the contributions in this article, is just the amount of time and hard work that goes into it.
Yeah. So I mean, it, you know, is an 80-hour work week inherent to the industry? Mm-hmm. No. Is a 40-hour work week inherent to the industry in many positions? Not really. Mm-hmm. The labor shortage certainly contributes. You know, if you're at a steak restaurant, if the guy who cooks steak doesn't show up, you don't just not cook steaks right that night. Someone else works that station, so they work a sixth day. So that really does have an impact. I think one of the things that's sort of a reframing of a restaurant that can be helpful in understanding why a 40-hour work week is tricky is that, you know, and the economics are what they are, is to think about restaurants a little bit as the last bastion of urban manufacturing. So sure, a restaurant brings in raw ingredients in the morning, does something to it during the day, and sells it at night. So, you know, and a kitchen is a manufacturing facility, and a dining room is a sales and marketing floor, if you want to draw parallels to other industries. And if you look at what's happened in this country over the past 100 years, we've uncoupled manufacturing and production from sales and marketing. You move production and manufacturing to where land is cheap, and you sell where there's density and land is expensive.
Right.
Well, try and apply that equation to restaurants, and it's really, certainly the fast food or commoditized food has achieved that. But if you're operating in a more chef-driven climate, the concept, you can't uncouple those two things. And so that makes the economics very challenging. You know, if you only have a 14-hour product life cycle, the idea that it might take 10 to 12 hours to bring that entire workflow right to completion, I think is one of the hard things. That's hard things to reconcile in the industry, and it has serious impact on the lives and, for some people, certainly the mental health of the individuals working in the industry.
Mm-hmm. And so how much of that have you seen? Because the article mentioned that Barbara Lynch Grupo began offering mental health counseling through an employee assistance plan called ESI after the death of a coworker in 2013. Were you with them at that point?
I had actually left at that point, but I'm familiar with the terrible thing that happened there. I personally don't have one degree of separation from that one, but I do, you know, there have been some horrible things that have happened of late. Whether it's, chefs and the tragedy of suicide, or, accidents and car crashes of people at 1-2 in the morning who are just exhausted.
Right.
It's horrible, and we need, and it's great to hear about the Grupo doing things to impact that and the Globe raising awareness to it.
And I mean, that seems to be a general thing, a great positive recently, just the greater awareness of mental health issues across the spectrum, because you also see it now in sports and different in restaurant industry, just in general too, in different population demographics. People are more aware of it now, because you may assume that, somebody who is, I think it's an older portion of the white male demographic too. You assume, if you think of the typical, you get a job, you have a family, everything, you've accomplished everything in it, but then that demographic is having some of the biggest problems. So do you think, in terms of the restaurant industry, that is kind of matching the rest of society at this point? Is it a relatively new topic in the restaurant? Is it still kind of taboo behind the scenes, or how would you kind of characterize it in general? I know you don't like to speak in absolutes, that you said, but...
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't say that it's taboo. You know, the restaurant industry is predicated on hospitality, and hospitality is predicated on empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the idea of something like mental health being taboo, not
right,
I that doesn't concern me. It is a relatively new topic. I think that there is an element of just push through and get things done in the restaurant industry that can make it hard to engage really important discussions around things like mental health. But I don't think that there's not an openness to it.
Okay.
I think it's just a new discussion point as the industry sort of reevaluates itself as one of the largest employers in the country and in the world.
I definitely think it's important to bring this issue to light. It's really easy to be like, oh, it's a restaurant job. Like, it's not like surgery where you're also like working long hours, or teaching where it's like very little pay. It's easy to kind of skip over the fact that like the restaurant industry touches everybody. If you eat at restaurants, you contribute to kind of like the fast-paced demand. And that's not like
contribute to the livelihoods of all the people that work there.
Right. No. That's not to like place blame on anybody, but it's just like a lot of mental health issues. It's very hidden. And bringing these things to light kind of forces the conversation out in the open.
I do think, if I recall correctly, a part of the Boston Globe article was mentioned something about, you know, guests demanding of restaurants better
practices.
You know, overall practices,
yeah,
around.
And part of that too is like this, the social media aspect with Yelp and different.
Yeah, and I certainly think that the guest is a critical stakeholder,
sure,
in the conversation. But, you know, there are a lot of stakeholders that have to be a part of any discussion when it comes to the restaurant industry. And, you know, I think whether it's tipping, people saying, you know, restaurateurs should do this, get it done, or it's mental health, where guests should demand this of restaurants. One of the things that I've learned is nothing's that simple. Like, we have to engage wider stakeholder groups, mm-hmm, in order to effect change in, I'm sure this is true of any industry, but this is the one I know and I love. But if you want to change something in something as big as the restaurant industry, there's more stakeholders than just the restaurant and the guest.
Right.
Definitely.
Do you think that there is more demand for the fast-paced part of it? Just wondering, because a lot of people, like, a comment on society now is with smartphones, with mobile technology, that and just the way American culture is right now, everybody wants everything immediately. And do you see that again impacting the industry and what is expected of restaurants, or is it not too different from?
I think it's something that's really relevant in different ways in different segments of the restaurant industry, because if you look at what's happening in quote unquote fast food, the exact opposite,
right,
is happening, where, you know, the largest growing segment in the restaurant industry is actually the fast casual segment, many of whom are taking a much more inefficient and uneconomical approach to sourcing and production. And, you know, guests are waiting longer for a salad made in the moment at Sweet Green or Dig In. And so I think, you know, that's true there. I think when you look at the full service sort of chef-driven restaurant, I don't think it becomes a time thing. I do think it is an attention thing. You know, the app entree dessert model, I think, is really shifting. In a world of, this gets a little, could get a little scary to talk about, but like, menus are literally responding to Instagram and Twitter, mm-hmm, I think, in some ways, and are like, small plate dining is much more like an Instagram feed or a Twitter feed than, you know, and app entree dessert is kind of like an old school photo album. Like, you get a new thing every time. Every time you get slightly bored with the thing that's in front of you, something new comes along.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one of the ways that restaurants are kind of interpreting that is, and for their guests, is in the different formats of dining.
Very cool. Kathleen, did you have anything else you wanted to ask on, or Eli, anything else that you wanted to bring up about the app, or just in general?
Maybe just while we're talking about like fair labor practices and seeking out those restaurants that do treat employees well and maybe pay fair wages, do you have any tips for people who want to patronize the good guys but don't necessarily know how to go about figuring out which restaurants those are?
You know,
to put you on the spot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little skeptical about pointing out anyone in particular in that, but I would say that, you know, I think the first place that this starts is actually isn't there. I think it's about sort of being engaged and in the moment as a diner, if that's something that's important to you. You know when the person serving you is deriving any joy from their job.
Sure.
And support the places where they are.
Okay.
You can feel it. If someone is talking to you and is sincerely excited about something going on in the restaurant, you can know almost definitively that somewhere upstream from that, there's a pretty thoughtful employer. So, you know, rather than pointing out these people do this really well and these people do that really well or look specifically for this, I think it really is about, you know, the places where you know that the person serving you or appears to be enjoying what they're doing. Someone's helping facilitate that. So go back.
That's good advice. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Thank you for coming in. This has been a great conversation too, because like I said, we haven't worked in the industry, and a lot of what we do, both at Friedman and on the show, is kind of more general for nutrition and agriculture, things like that. So having this side of things too is always great in exploring.
Yes, I think it's hard to have a conversation these days about the food system overall without having some sort of conversation about restaurants. It's just too big a part of the equation.
Definitely.
All
right, so we're going to take another song break here. We will be back. Going to shift a little bit more towards some nutrition news recently and talk about public perceptions of health, both with food and supplements. May have a quiz for Kathleen. And then we'll be back to wrap up with Eli as well. So my song of the week, I went to Warped Tour this week, and one of the lesser-known bands playing there was The Interrupters. With Hellcat Records, which is Tim Armstrong, Rancid's big project. So you'll definitely get a Rancid vibe from these guys. This is off their newest album called Say It Out Loud, and the song By My Side. You're listening to An Unbalanced Breakfast on WMFO Medford 91.5 FM, streaming live on WMFO.org.
I'm Simon Cowell for PETA. Far be it from me to be critical, but I find it really appalling that this year thousands of dogs will die of heatstroke inside parked cars. There people thought that little errand would only take a minute, or it wasn't that hot. But delays happen, and temperatures inside a car quickly rise in summer, even when the window's cracked. Never, ever leave your dog inside a parked car. Your dog idolizes you. In warm weather, keep him safe at home.
For more information, visit PETA.org.
And welcome back to an Unbalanced Breakfast here on WMFO Medford 91.5 FM, streaming live on WMFO.org. Less than 10 minutes left to go this morning. We are here with Eli from Clothbound and Kathleen, my co-host. Number here is 855-915-9636 or 781-350-3264. So we spent much of the morning talking about the restaurant and food service industry. Now we're going to switch gears to kind of what, no pun intended here, what has been our bread and butter, but kind of general, more general nutrition topics. And there's always something in the news. Nice study again on butter cropped up in the past couple of weeks. I don't know if you saw the headlines, Kathleen, but re-sparked the debate, is butter back, is butter healthy? And kind of came down to, you know what, there's nothing conclusive that's conclusive bad or good about butter, so just eat it, you might say, in moderation, which of course our dean is not a fan of saying. However, he has been quoted in just about every article on the study, because it was done by Tufts. And he says, overall, our results suggest that butter should neither be demonized nor considered, quote, back as a route to good health. So he is a co-author of the study. So this kind of leads me into, first of all, Kathleen, did you have any strong opinions on butter or the study or anything?
Because this is
a huge deal when the guidelines got put out and everything, too. So
I do not have a strong opinion on butter, except that I've heard recently of this phenomenon where people are putting butter in their coffee, which sounds
The bulletproof coffee,
bizarre to me. Have you tried it?
I have not, but I believe Allie, who was on the Freedom Sprout, wrote about that. She tried it out, and I don't think it worked out for her. But we won't get into that whole project. Not a fan of that. But so basically, this whole concept of healthy food is in the news again because the FDA is reevaluating what you can call a healthy food. That's been in the news for the past couple of months. And then you just had this chart put out by the New York Times, I believe 2 weeks ago, July 5th, this was released. And it's basically a graph showing, so they interviewed 40, I believe, nutritionists from the American Society for Nutrition. And asked them about a bunch of different foods and what they would consider healthy. And then they took a survey of the general public on the same foods to see what they perceive as healthy and mapped it out on this chart. So you have the y-axis, the vertical axis is percentage of nutritionists saying food is healthy, and the x-axis is saying what the general public perceives as healthy. And then some of the discrepancies are kind of weird to me because you always have this whole thing about like, oh, it's very confusing. Like you have the study about butter and like, what should I eat? What's healthy? What's not? And for the most part, there's agreement, you know, spinach, healthy, chicken, healthy, kale, healthy. But then you have some really bizarre discrepancies, such as quinoa. 90% of nutritionists say it's healthy, because it is, as compared to less than 60% of the public thinking it's healthy, which is crazy to me. And then on the flip side, you have granola, where less than 50% of nutritionists say it's healthy, because really not. There's nothing totally beneficial. Same thing with coconut oil, but the public, for whatever reason, over 70 to 80% of the public thinks that they're healthy. There are some certain things like, you know, coffee and alcohol where there's been a lot of studies that go back and forth. Stuff like coconut oil and granola, I don't know where you would be getting your information that it's particularly healthy. So my big thing, by the way, butter is about 40% for both nutritionists and public. It just amazes me when people complain about how confusing it can be for a certain food. It's like, it kind of boils down to common sense to me, like whether or not something's healthy, like quinoa.
But
I know that you won't agree with.
You've also had, you've gone to school for nutrition.
Before that, like if you think, same thing, like sushi is one of the things, and it's like, well, if you sit down and think about it, especially, so you get sushi with brown rice, you have fish, some vegetables, some brown rice. Why wouldn't that be considered healthy? And apparently the public is pretty unclear on that because just over 50% think that sushi would be healthy.
But I think a lot of people just get their nutrition information from social media. I know, like, we've kind of talked about this in other contexts, but if you have a platform, suddenly you're an expert.
Right.
And there's a lot of misinformation that gets spread around from quote-unquote experts that people are falling for. Or subscribing to.
Well, and one thing that we're going to end things real quick with a little quiz for Kathleen, but public perceptions of supplements. Supplements are great. Supplements are a cure-all. This is something a lot of people believe. But then you have the question, what does scientific evidence actually show? So about a year ago, this just this is one of those things where it got reposted just this year, but I think the chart's a little less than a year old now, where it shows supplements and a certain health effect that they've been linked to, and then it shows you both the strength of that evidence and how interested people are in it. So, according to this chart, Kathleen, this in strength of evidence, what is the best scientific evidence point to in terms of supplement and its health effects? Is it coconut oil on obesity, St. John's wort on depression, iron on child development, or turmeric on peptic ulcers?
What was the third one?
Iron on child development.
And we're asking what
has the most conclusive, like, strongest scientific evidence?
I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I'm going to go with turmeric on ulcers.
It is St. John's wort, and has been shown to be equally as effective as conventional medications in treating depression. And then this chart does link to the actual study, so you can see more for yourself. And this is a fun one, because people always... people think that, you know, vitamin C is a cure-all, especially for colds. But according to scientific evidence, what is more beneficial for you? You will probably know this as a nutrition student, but is it vitamin D or vitamin C?
What is better for you?
Or what has the strongest evidence leading to positive health effects?
I hope I don't get this wrong. Vitamin D.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. General health and all-cause mortality has been linked to vitamin C. Colds, not so much. All right. And then for the last one, I'll ask you, I'm going to switch it up. I'll ask you a more simple true or false question. On a scale of conclusive to inconclusive, just one of those two. How strongly linked is green tea to cholesterol and improving cholesterol?
I'm going to go with inconclusive.
Correct.
Okay. Yes.
So
okay.
Green tea probably doesn't have any harmful effects for you, but is not conclusively a positive thing for you as well. So that wraps up that little quiz. You can check that out. More online.
Before we go, we should once again remind people about the cloth-bound pop-up that Eli can tell us more about that's happening next week.
Yeah, so we'll be launching on the later half of next week in downtown Boston at the Clover pop-up space at 160 Federal Street. But best way to keep in touch with what's going on is keep an eye on us on Facebook. Just search for us at cloth-bound. You'll find us pretty fast.
Great, thank you.
Great, and people who are interested can download the app through the iTunes App Store.
Yep, you can search Clothbound there. We're the only guy in the room.
Awesome. So definitely check that out. Thank you again, Eli, for coming in nice and early
on a
Saturday morning. Thank you, Kathleen, for coming in for their readjusted time slot.
Yeah.
And we should be back in 2 weeks here. You've been listening to An Unbalanced Breakfast on WMFO Medford 91.5 FM, streaming live on WMFO.org. Stay tuned for Mike on the Mic, and we will see you in 2 weeks. Have a good weekend.
Bye.
Takes a lot to make us do.
When it comes to me and you.
And him and her and the baby too.
Too many cooks, it's true.
You say it goes, it'll spoil the broth.
Honey, I think that's not true.
Well, maybe too many cooks will spoil the broth. But they'll fill our hearts with
so much, so much love.
Soup.
Everyone adds an extra scoop.
Mix an ounce of a smile so sweet.
A dash of cool to add.